Greetings, creeps, and welcome to episode 19 of the Slashernings podcast. I'm your host, JR, and this is where we discuss horror's influence from the silver screen and beyond. First, I'm sorry I missed the last episode, but like the hordes of the undead, ain't no grave can hold my body down. Unless by grave you mean my basement home theater, in which case, yeah, it probably could. The main focus of this week is physical media. Between the nostalgia-fogged memories I have of being terrified by box art at Blockbuster, like the terrifying lenticular Jack Frost cover that I couldn't even look at, the Bride of Chucky cover, nope, freaked me out. Back then I stuck to Goosebumps and the Billy Zane Phantom, thank you very much. Fast forward to my early teens where I was really getting into the genre and shopping at movie shops and talking to other creeps in the aisles, getting recommendations. Shout out to Melissa for lending me the VHS copy of Meet the Feebles back in the day. And even now, my own library of horror and B-movie sleaze in the form of Blu-rays, 4Ks, and DVDs, physical media is such an important part of my horror love and always will be. Long live physical media. Welcome to this week's episode of the Slashernings podcast. I'm joined by my buddy Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, just living large, you know, living that corona life.
For real. So Bill has been a buddy of mine for a while. He's the biggest collector of physical media that I know. My collection pales in comparison to him and his amazing finds at getting things for good prices and selling them for good prices.
Yes. Just how yes to that.
That's fair. How long have you been into the whole horror scene?
Oh, geez. As far as like horror goes, I feel like my answer is as cliche as they get. It was, you know, when I first saw The Exorcist when I was like 7-8 years old. You know, my dad to this day pretends he didn't used to rent us horror movies, but he is misremembering in his old age because he used to bring us to the video store, my sister and I. And anything we wanted to rent was cool. And he didn't care. And his whole thing was if we scared ourselves silly, we weren't sleeping in his bed. So we had to deal with the repercussions. As far as getting into the horror scene is collecting, probably around like 2001, 2002, I started like becoming more obsessive about buying physical media, and between Criterion Collection stuff, which was all new territory, and then just like all the great horror movies coming out. In fact, I remember, I think the first, if you want to call it boutique release that I bought, was the Anchor Bay Opera DVD from Newbury Comics back in whatever year that was, 2000, early 2000s.
I think that definitely qualifies as an entry point for like boutique-y stuff. I mean, Anchor Bay, they ran every single item they had into the ground. Like how many different versions of Evil Dead 2 did they have, you know?
Which is still being re-released constantly to this day. So, I mean, Sam Raimi's never going to not be rich off that movie.
No. But, I mean, I've got my 4K of that. I think I'm good. I don't think I need any other versions of it. I have, like, the Necronomicon Squishy Book 1, 2. And
oh, how is yours holding up? Because I bought that so long when it first came out, and mine just rotted to nothingness.
So mine started to rot. Like, not on the front, luckily, but on the spine itself and the back a little bit, like on the ear. Once that started, though, I put it in a shadow box with a little ash figure and some pins. So hopefully that'll keep it safe and stop me from wanting to, like, open it up.
That was smart. Yeah. See, I didn't do anything smart with it. I just had it out and it banged around with the rest of my collection and turned into just brittle ash.
Kind of fitting.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As I was saying it, I was like, that I did not do that on purpose.
But again, with like Anchor Bay, that is where I kind of started getting into it too. And then like Synapse started putting out stuff like right afterward. And that's where where I got into like the Blu-ray side of it. But now there are so many labels that just, there's never going to be a hidden film anymore because you have 20 plus different boutique labels putting out crazy shit.
That's absolutely true. And I was thinking about that the other day, how it's not, we're probably never going to go back. At least it'll be a long time, but we're never going back to a time where stuff is just lost and hidden and waiting to be unearthed because just there's so many companies doing it now and everyone just, I mean, it's so big now, and I don't know if it's just because we're so engrossed in it that we think it's huge. I'm sure to the normal people, none of this is even happening, but for so many of us, it just takes up all of our brain power. But yeah, it's not like it used to be, you know, like, although that being said, a lot of people are still learning about a lot of movies through word of mouth and through Instagram and Facebook groups and stuff like that. So it is cool to see some of these lost movies being unearthed and put out some being better than others for sure. But yeah, with so many new labels popping up, it's a really exciting time for physical media.
And it's always a gamble with some of like the really niche labels, because movies that I've never heard of, starring people I have no idea who they are, and directors who only did that one movie. I'm like, yeah, that looks cool enough. I'll pick it up. And then it's a crapshoot. But we've kind of gotten to the point where the shit movie is still the fun movie. It's getting harder and harder for me to draw the line of what's a B movie and what's actual garbage.
Yeah, no, that's super true. I mean, look at Severin just putting out Patrick Still Lives, which is a movie that, you know, has a reputation of being like absolutely terrible. But nowadays that's what we want. We want absolutely terrible because all of these movies are being reassessed by people who really want that type of stuff. And what made it terrible, you know, 20 years ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago is making it just absolutely classic and essential nowadays. So it's great the way the sensibilities have kind of shifted.
And you're seeing it with like slightly more modern films too, like how Scream Factory, which we'll get into in a bit, put out 13 Ghosts and Ghost Ship, both of which are notorious cheese fests that when I saw them, like when they first came, like, wow, this is crap. Like, this is unexcusable garbage. But now it's fun. I look back at them fondly. I wonder how much of that is nostalgia, or if it's because all of the other, like the Patrick Still Lives coming out, stuff like that, if it's helping to kind of change the lens on even like 2000s horror like that.
Well, I'll tell you, as someone who did not see 13 Ghosts when it first came out and had never seen it until I checked out the Scream Factory release, because that was the kind of movie where when that first came out, I don't even know what year that was. What was that, early 2000s?
Yeah.
I had no interest in it whatsoever. My interest did not go in that direction. And so I passed on it easily. And then, you know, seeing it pop back up over the years, I was always like, it has a reputation, it's terrible. And then I looked at the cast and I was like, wait a minute, this might be awesome. And maybe now that I like garbage a lot more than I used to, maybe I'll enjoy it. And I'll tell you, I did enjoy it. It was ridiculous. It was over the top. It was terribly made. Way too, you know, early 2000s shaky cam and terrible editing techniques that they used back then. But through the lens of 2020, I found myself really enjoying it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I'm not going to say it was a 5-star movie, and I did trade it in to Bull Moose like the week after I watched it, because I don't feel the need to ever watch it again. But I'm glad I finally saw it, and it was cool to see a cleaned up version.
I have such a hard time trading stuff in, even if I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again. But it'll just sit on my shelf for forever. Like, I picked up Whodunit from Vinegar Syndrome last week, and I put it on. It was fun, super cheese fest. I don't plan on watching it ever again, but I feel the need to leave it on my shelf, and I can't shake that.
Yeah, you know, I'm the same way with a lot of stuff, and I used to trade a lot more in. And my collection over the last few years has gone from being like, I'll buy everything, and I'll keep it, and then I'll trade in like half of it, to now I'm way more focused on certain labels and certain types of movies, so that now when I go through my collection, if I'm ever like, oh, geez, you know, do I want to drop X amount of dollars on this big release? Maybe I can trade some stuff in to go toward it. I look through and I go, I have nothing I want to get rid of. Like, none of this can I live without. And, you know, objectively, yeah, Whodunit, is that like a necessary movie to own? Am I going to watch it again? Maybe show a friend or something. You know, pop it on a movie group night or something like that. But the fact that it's Vinegar Syndrome just immediately makes it like, nope, off limits, can't trade it in, because, you know, they're one of those labels along with Severin and a whole bunch of others that they put so much care into every aspect of that, from the restorations to the packaging, the features. To me, it's more like, as a whole, it's a piece of artwork. Not just, you know, some trashy movie. Like, if I had like a DVD copy of Whodunit, that thing would be long gone.
Yeah, you're completely right. It's all in that presentation that they put into it. Like, the packaging being one of my favorite things about it, just that thick cardstock they use for the sleeves is a really cool. It's a physical memento. It's not just the movie itself. And even to take it that step further, where they put it into the archive and they put it up for sale in that store, which is just this museum curated gallery of love for all horror and sleeves, like. Easily my favorite store. It's silly to drive 2.5 hours to go to a movie store, but it's the best one.
Yeah, I mean, I've only been there once, and it was more like three and a half hours for us, because we're but it was definitely worth the trip. And if, you know, if I could, I would just go back all the time. But it's like, how do you justify spending 7 hours in the car to go shopping?
Exactly.
It'll be like a special thing. Like, I'm thinking maybe like once this whole, you know, pandemic thing passes, maybe do like a once or twice a year, take a trip out there and go with friends and just have a good time. So,
Exactly. And it's
but
right down the road from
anybody
two
that's
roads.
listening, oh, sorry,
No, you're
anybody
good.
that's listening that's in New England, anywhere in New England, I don't care if you're in, you know, upstate Maine, if it's in driving distance and you love physical media of any kind, whether it's records or videotapes or DVDs, Blu-rays, take a trip down there because it is 100% worth it.
No, absolutely. It's one of my favorite day trips to make. And I do try to make a day of it. Like I'll go to there, I'll hit up Weirdo Wonderland, which is a couple towns over, and then on the way back, I'll hit up Two Roads Brewery too, depending what they got on tap.
I don't know what Weirdo Wonderland is, but it sounds fantastic.
You've probably seen them. The guy who owns it runs a booth at most conventions. It's a bunch of like posters and toys and collectibles and a lot of like independent artist stuff that he curates and sells all together in one spot, which is really neat.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Good stuff. So we've got the archive down there, and then closer around to us, like up in like New Hampshire, Maine area, we've got Bull Moose too. So a lot of good local shops are picking up physical media, and Bull Moose is rad too. Like I've never been in there and had a bad experience. Like the crew there is always just they're knowledgeable in their own niche, which I think is a really cool thing to have now.
Yeah, for sure. And even, you know, they've had some turnover with their staff, but they always get good people going in there, and it's one of the last places, you know, that you can just drive to any old day that carries that kind of stuff. It to me, it reminds me so much of what Newbury Comics used to be, which there was a reason Newbury Comics was essentially where I lived for a good 15 years, you know. And you could go in and spend hours just looking through CDs and movies and comics and stuff, and that's exactly what Bull Moose is now. My main location is in Salem, New Hampshire. It's, you know, only about an hour drive each way, which isn't too bad. And I never walk out of there without dropping about $100 at least, so always worth it.
Yeah, that's my favorite one too. That one's huge. That one and the one in blanking on the other town. The Portsmouth, New Hampshire one's really good too.
Yeah, Portsmouth I used to go to, and then the last time I went there a while back, the selection was kind of spotty, and I decided it wasn't really worth the extra drive when I could always just go to Salem, and that's
Yeah,
the best one.
that's
And actually, I didn't realize until the other day when we were there, that is the biggest location that they have, so that makes sense.
yeah, fitting. We had briefly mentioned Scream Factory when we talked about the 13 Ghost release. Now that one, lately that seems to have a little bit more notoriety in the boutique label like community. I find that a lot of people hate them, and I can't quite figure out exactly why. What's your take on
All right. This could become a whole thing, but I'll try to make
it?
it not. I do shy away from Scream Factory for the most part. Partly because of some of their what I see as shady business practices. I know, without airing any dirty laundry, one of the big websites that you can go to and buy physical media, I'll let everybody guess which one it is. The guy who runs that has voiced some major concerns about them and some of their pricing policies that really hurt retailers like the one I'm talking about. So I don't like that. I don't like anything that, you know, hampers other people's business when they're really just trying to do good for the community. I really got turned off to Scream Factory when they started doing things like putting out releases with two slip covers and a lithograph to try to like lure you in and try to like, hey, look at this special edition limited to 10,000. Ooh, you know, buy. And it's just like, come on, man. Like, there's a right way to do that, and there's like a scummy way to do that. And I felt like they were leaning more toward the latter. That being said, I mean, they get some huge movies, which is great. You know, I mean, the fact that they just put out that Friday the 13th set is rad. The Halloween set they put out was great. And I do own a small selection of what I see as like essential releases from them. Creepshow, Trick or Treat, Return of the Living Dead, stuff like that. I used to really like their double feature Blu-rays that they did, which were like always just these like cheeseball movies, whether it was like Sword and Sorcery or Haunted House stuff that, you know, you could totally see Severin, Vinegar Syndrome, people like that putting them out now. And they would put out these double features for like $15, and it was awesome. And then somewhere along the line, they decided, oh, crap, wait, there's a market for these? We could sell these for $29 for just one movie? Great. And so you're like looking at their pricing, and you're like, wow, why are you doing this? So, like I said, I don't collect them at all for the most part, but every now and then they put something out that I think is like essential to have, and I'll pick it up.
It's that Friday the 13th set rules. Although they did, same with the Halloween one, they still had like errors on the discs when they got sent out. Like, I've already submitted for my replacement ones, which is frustrating for such a product, such a big thing that people have been waiting on for so long. Cause like I have the tin too, but the features and the upgrades and stuff they put into the Scream Factory will make it worth it if the discs work.
Yeah. To me, I'm glad you brought that up, cause I forgot about that somehow. That whole thing is just crazy because it's your biggest release of the year. Like, it's something people have been clamoring for forever. And you're more concerned with hitting your spoopy release date than you are of having somebody. There was nobody at Shout Factory, Scream Factory, who could have done like a simple quality control watch through and just picked up on these issues ahead of time. And like, even if you have to delay it and put out a thing saying like, you know, oh, we apologize, we're going to have to delay its release because XXX, you know, this is what's going on. Like, the community, some of them will be mad, and those people are chodes. But most people will understand and would rather get a high-quality product a little bit later than get a rushed product that's got nothing but issues and have to wait for replacement discs and submit request forms and all kinds of nonsense just because you got to get it out on that, you know, Friday the 13th October release date. Super spoopy. That I thought was just really crappy. And, you know, you don't see things like that from some of those other big boutique labels. Like, Arrow's a good example of that. When they run into an issue, they postpone the release. And sometimes it's weeks, sometimes it's months. And, you know, they get flack for it sometimes from that, you know, chody subset of people. But, they do the right thing all the time, and they keep people informed. And then by the time the product comes out, it's always fantastic.
I've literally never had an issue with any Arrow release that I've picked up. Always perfect. Yeah. What are your... So one of my biggest problems I've had recently with boutique labels, that's not super recent, but relatively, is Blue Underground put out those really cool lenticular cases for releases for Maniac, House by the Cemetery, Zombie, Two Evil Eyes, and... I'm missing one that I know I have on my shelf over there.
Hold on. Daughters of Darkness.
Oh, okay. I wasn't thinking of that one because that's more recent and came out on 4K with the lenticular. I do need to pick that up, though. But 2 months after they did all those other cool lenticular covers, they're like, oh, we're going to put it on 4K now. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing that drives me crazy. And that's why, you know, I love Blue Underground. They were one of those companies early days who were putting out great movies on DVD in good packaging. But yeah, like putting out stuff, and any company that does this, I'm just like, give them the sad, frowny, disappointed face, because you're going to put out a super high price. What are those things? Like $40, yeah. $39.99 up to $49.99 for what should be a definitive edition. And then, like you said, like 2 months later, hey, check it out, new one with a new slipcover in 4K with the DVD, or with the Blu-ray, I should say. And it's like, well, what was the point of this? You're just literally just gouging your customer base. And they say it's, well, we know that the 4K people, you know, or the Blu-ray people haven't all upgraded to 4K. And you're like, okay, yeah, well, then why didn't you release them at the same time? Why didn't you put out two different editions and say, hey, if you're into 4K, here you go. If you're into Blu-ray, here you go. It's just... scummy marketing, you know, predatory, picking up on the fact that we'll all stupidly hand over our money again and again and again and again for these movies. Like, how many times have I bought The Beyond at this point, or Zombie? You know, it's like, and how many more times will I? Probably a million, because anytime they put out a new edition, I'm like, oh, I've already got that. And then, you know, that itch in the back of your mind kicks in, and you're like, okay, I have to have it.
Once Beyond gets the 4K release, I'll be cashing out on that one too. I mean, the Grindhouse releasing one is still phenomenal, but I'll get it in 4K.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. You know, and Bill Lustig, you know, God bless him. All that nonsense going on with Arrow, with the Django release, and him holding it up. Obviously, I haven't been in the room. I'm not a fly on the wall, so I don't know all the details of that situation. But from what I gather, it was just, you know, a bunch of nonsense. Bill being Bill, trying to milk everything he could out of the deal. So, but luckily, that's coming back out now, which is cool. I feel really bad for all those people who had to shell out $150+ on eBay for copies of Django. It's a great movie, but it's definitely not worth that much money, because, you know, it came out and then it immediately got pulled. And, you know, of course, when something like that happens, everybody gets dollar signs in their eyes. And now here it is. Now it's going to be readily available for everybody to buy. And it's like, you know, hey, if you spent 150 bucks because you had to get some clout, that's on you, man. And then I saw the 4K of that's coming, you know, in what is it, April, I think. But again, Arrow being Arrow, they do the right thing. They say, hey, we've got the Blu-ray edition is going to be coming. We also have the 4K coming in April. Decide which one you want. Here you go. They didn't like bait and switch you, trick you into buying the Blu-ray and then unveil the 4K. So just another example of Arrow being classy.
Exactly. I was hesitant on the 4K, on the upgrade to 4K, but it is worth it for a lot of the releases I've picked up. Some of them, no lie, I can't see the difference to save my life, but a handful of them look amazing. Like the whole Guillermo del Toro set that came out, or not the set, but the Pan's Labyrinth at least that came out, incredible.
Yeah, I honestly have not seen a 4K Blu-ray release yet. I haven't watched any. Once I get my grubby little hands on a PS5, I'll be able to buy all the 4K goodness. It's funny because I was with Shane Murphy getting tattooed, and he was talking about all of his 4Ks and stuff, and just him talking about it and talking about how great some of these movies look, like Zombie and stuff. I was like, okay, I have to buy a player, and I was like this close to buying one from Target for like 250 bucks. And then I remembered, oh wait, the PS5 is a 4K player. I'm really glad I didn't waste $250. But when the time comes, I'll probably upgrade some of these to 4K. I'll buy some 4Ks because a lot of the discs now are actually dirt cheap. But I can't imagine that I'm going to start rebuying on 4K all the things that I already have on Blu-ray. That just seems silly.
And a lot of things don't need it. Like, there's only so much cleaning up a movie can get before it starts to look like crap.
I said I'm gonna wait for 16K to come out, and then I'll upgrade everything.
Just have it injected right into your eyeballs, man.
Absolutely.
Whole
Yep, I just
movie
need
right
the chip.
there.
When we all get that 8K chip directly into our retinas, we won't need physical media anymore.
I know you trade in a lot, but what are some of like the bigger ones that you won't trade in, like permanent residence in your collection?
Oh, geez. Most things at this point, honestly, because my collection has not. I don't want to say dwindled because it's actually grown, but once I got more focused with it and I started getting rid of the stuff that I didn't see as like really necessary, the majority of my collection is Arrow, Vinegar Syndrome, Severin, Code Red, Mondo Macabro, and Criterion, with obviously a bunch of stuff from other boutique labels, but those are like the big ones. I've got like two full shelf displays of Arrow, a full top to bottom of Vinegar Syndrome. There's only so much real estate in my room right now. I have Blu-rays and DVDs like piled up on the floor in front of them. So I had to become a little bit more particular. And really, it was like, okay, who do I want to give my hard-earned money to more than anybody, you know? And it's some of the movies, like, yeah, maybe they're not like the greatest movies ever made. Like, okay, do I have to own a copy of Extro 3 on Blu-ray? Is that completely necessary? Maybe not. It's fun. It's stupid. But it's also from a company that I think is doing some of the best work in physical media right now. And I'll always throw my money to Vinegar Syndrome on no matter what they put out, because it's, you know, it's worth it. I used to be that way with Criterion. You know, it was like blind buy everything because it's all worth it in its own way. So like I said, I'm more particular about what I buy. Things that I have that are I'll never get rid of. The Arrow Scarlet Hellraiser box, that's never going anywhere. The Criterion Ingmar Bergman collection, that's my baby, that's never going anywhere. I'm looking across the room to try to see Most of the stuff that are like sacred ground, besides some of the Vinegar Syndrome stuff, which with them, my prized possessions are the their initial run of exploitation TV releases. The stuff that they did when they were doing, like, I think they did like an Indiegogo campaign or something back in the early days, and they put out a Blu-ray of Frozen Scream and was it Executioner 2, which was limited to, I want to say, it was either 550 or 600 copies, all hand numbered. I have that. That's probably one of my prized possessions. So just any of the rarer stuff from my favorite labels is, I'll trade it in if I'm not going to watch it sometime soon and I know it's in circulation, but if it's something that's like super limited, I can't imagine ever letting it go.
One of the coolest pieces you have in yours that I've seen posted a handful of times is your De La Morte, De La More Cemetery Man set, which, shameful admission, until you had asked what I preferred, that or Suspiria, I hadn't actually seen Cemetery Man before.
Oh, geez.
I know.
Have you seen it now?
Yep, I picked up the region-free Blu-ray from, like, Sleaze something, the one that comes in the yellow case.
Oh, Shameless Films.
Shameless Films.
I think there's, I want to say it's an Italian Blu-ray release that you can get on eBay for, like, a really good deal. It just comes in a blue case. It's nothing like, it doesn't look too crazy. But from what I've read, it's got the best transfer available right now. The one I got, which, oh, geez. You know what? Let me get up and walk over there. I don't need to what company put it out. Oh, whatever this company is, 84 Entertainment. Sure. Yeah, right, like who? I believe it's German, and they put out all these hard box editions, and it actually has a 3D Blu-ray version in it, which I can't even imagine watching that movie on a 3D Blu-ray. Like, what? Why? Yeah, this, I mean, that's been one of my favorite movies. That's in my top three horror movies of all time. From the time I first saw it, when I think I was like, I want to say I was like 18 at the time. I did a double feature over a weekend of that and Carnival of Souls. It was the first time I'd ever seen either of them. And obviously Carnival of Souls is great, but Cemetery Man is just absolutely just one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. And I always wanted to own a copy because I had the, I had bought the DVD from Anchor Bay from, I want to say I bought it at That's Entertainment in Worcester, actually. I don't remember how much I paid for it. Probably not too much. And I like wanted to upgrade. And then I saw this as I was scrolling through, I don't even know, like social media somewhere, whether it was Instagram or whatever. And I was like, okay, I have to have that. That's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I scoured eBay for months and months trying to like hope I could find a copy. And finally I saw someone post it up and I want to say I paid about $100 for it. And it was money well spent. And I've seen it go for more, and I saw it once go for a little bit less. But the coolest thing about it, aside from the fact that it's gorgeous, is I'll bring the camera up to here. Where is it? Oh, there we go. Limited to 150 copies. Yep. Now, I don't know how strict they were with those, because I feel like anything that's only 150, you probably would never see it up for sale. And I've seen a few of this one. But yeah, I mean, it's, that one will never go anywhere. You'd have to pry that one from my cold dead hand.
Yeah. It was definitely, I don't know what I was expecting from it, because I knew very little about the movie other than it pops up obviously frequently in like horror aficionado sites and whatnot. But it was amazing, and I couldn't take my eye off the screen the entire time.
You know what it is? It's so weird, because it comes at the end, right on the tail end of like the Italian cycle. And I like to say, I'm sure there might be one or two other movies made after this that were worthwhile. But to me, for everything I've seen, that was the last great Italian horror movie. And it's just when you think you've seen everything from a zombie movie, you watch that movie and you go, all right, apparently not. That, like, you hadn't even skimmed the surface. And it's gory, but not over the top. It's like sexy. Like that actress whose name I'm forgetting right now is so gorgeous. You got Rupert Everett. Like, what of all people to be showing up in a bizarre Italian horror movie, Rupert Everett. The character of Nagi has to be like one of my favorite characters in all of horror movie history. And that ending, which I won't spoil for anybody who hasn't seen it. to me, that rivals the ending of The Beyond for like my favorite horror movie endings. It's just so cool. And I think I've drawn comparisons before to the ending of Krampus, which I think kind of mirrors the ending of Cemetery Man. So that's kind of neat. I wonder if they did that on purpose or if that was just a happy accident.
I feel like they must have. The endings are not the meat and sustenance of it, but the actual like practicality of it almost mirror each other. So there had to have been some acknowledgement of it.
I hope so. I like to think so. That would raise Krampus in my estimation.
I love Krampus. Like, I know it's not it's not Trick or Treat, but it's still an amazing holiday theme movie from him.
But what is Trick or Treat besides Trick or Treat? I mean, that's that's one of those movies where it got so hyped and it was such a big deal, and like I can't hate on it at all because it's just everyone who loves that movie is totally right and everyone who hates that movie is totally wrong.
It's weird to watch it grow every single year because it sat in the shelf for so long and finally came out. And I remember seeing it like DVDs wherever I picked up my first one at Newbery. And it's just every year there's more Sam's everywhere, like more figures, more costumes at Spirit Halloween, just everything Sam.
Yeah. And you know what? Like normally I'd kind of like balk at that like over commodification of things. Like, it's like, okay, we don't need any more coffee mugs with Jason on them, you know. we don't need any more socks with Freddy. But the more Trick or Treat merch I see, the more I'm like, yes, more people need to see this movie. It's so good. And it's, and I mean, I think it's a classic. I think it's considered a classic at this point. But it is also kind of, in the grand scheme of things, it's kind of underseen. It never quite reached that same, like, horror zeitgeist that a lot of the other big movies have. I think more people need to give it a chance if they ever shied away from it, because it is a hell of a lot better than I think it had any right to be. And it's just one of the most fun horror anthology movies ever.
I'm a sucker for a good anthology, with Creepshow being arguably my favorite one. Have you watched any of the Shudder Creepshow show?
I have not actually. I want to. I've heard good things. I like the whole premise of it being just like an episodic kind of anthology series. I am going to get around to it sooner rather than later. I just don't have Shudder, which I know like sounds crazy, but I don't even have enough time in the day to watch all the movies that I buy, let alone like, I can't imagine any time where I'm going to go like, yeah, I could watch one of these hundreds of Blu-rays that I haven't watched yet, but let's go on Shudder and see what's going on.
They do get some good stuff. Like, I love the Creepshow show. The production on it's neat. The different directors they have put a really cool spin on it. And they do carry a lot of, like, the old tropes. Like, the ashtray from Father's Day from the first movie is in every single episode hidden somewhere.
Oh, that's cool.
So it is just neat little nods like that. And then, like, the original crate shows up a couple times in the first season.
Oh, wow. So it's supposed to evolve. What is it? Kind of like a Creepshow shared universe type thing.
Exactly. It's the creep looks completely different than he did in either of the first two films, but like the spirit is still there, and like the overall maniacal glee from it is neat.
Nice. Well, that's good. You know what? I would want them to kind of update it for a modern time as opposed to just have it be like a straight up cash in on the original. I think that's cool.
Exactly.
I'm on your recommendation, I'm gonna have to buckle down and check it out. I'm sure there's a free Shudder trial that I can catch.
Yeah, you can get a 30-day free trial, and it's like $65 for a year. And I sound like I'm advertising for Shudder. If they want to sponsor my show, hey, they should.
Yeah, give Jesse money, Shudder.
But they're worth it. And I enjoy watching like the Joe Bob too. Like I like all the horror host kind of stuff. I mean, his is definitely a little more of a nuanced shtick to it. But
yeah, I tell you, if Shudder had got Elvira to come and do a show, I'd have been on it immediately. Joe Bob, bless Joe Bob for all the good he's done. Just not for me. Am I still here? Okay.
You're still here. You're good.
My cat just knocked my phone out of my hand.
Glad to see your cats are doing well. I know you had that scare a little while ago.
Yeah, not to derail us, but yeah, it's been a tough almost 2 years, which is crazy. Wow. I'm pretty sure at this point anybody that maybe donated to our GoFundMe to help that cat is thinking that that was all a big scam, because he was only given 12 weeks to live, and here we are, what, 21 months later, and he's still going strong. Yeah. They did the surgery in January of 20, what was it, 2018, 2019, whatever it was. 2019. Yeah, 2019. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the vet told us, well, we got the majority of the tumor, but the margins aren't clean. And, you know, that's how cancer works. If there's any cells in there, they're going to spawn and propagate. But I kept bringing him for visit after visit, and he goes and sees his vet, and they look in, and they're like, I cannot believe this cat is still going. Like, this
that's
is crazy.
So awesome.
Like, I just got something in the mail saying he's ready for his annual once a year senior visit, and I was like, wow. He had to go for, what do you call, parasite medication over the summer, and the vet is just like, I can't believe we're doing this. So it's awesome. He's the best.
Well, I am glad that he is doing well.
So is he.
We had brought up the Hellraiser Scarlet box set earlier. If you were to be turned into a Cenobite, what would your disfiguring transformation include?
Oh my god. I will tell you, Jesse, I've never once spent a minute of my life thinking about what kind of horrible Cenobite disfiguration I would have. Jeez, that's a tough one. Let me get back to you on that one. I'm gonna think about it through the rest of this conversation, and let's retouch on that in a bit, because I don't want to be hasty and give a bad answer.
We will circle back, because now my next couple questions are all a little bit thinkers. So we have to circle back a couple times.
Oh, geez. Okay.
I know, right? If you could light the green light, pick whoever you wanted to direct it, what movie would you see remade, and who would you have do it?
So remake any movie with any director?
Yep.
Oh boy. Oh. See, this is tough, because part of me is a total purist, and I think that you should not. I feel like remakes are so unnecessary, because you know what? If you want to show a movie to a new generation, just show them the original movie, you know? And then people go, oh, well, you know, update it for modern sensibilities. We'll just make a new movie then with the modern sensibilities. Like, why mess with perfection? All right, hold on.
Because there are a few arguments for movies that are surpassed by the remake, like The Thing or The Fly. Like, they're few and far between, but they exist.
I stand corrected, because you are absolutely right. And I often forget that those are remakes, because I think they're remakes done right, where they take a basic premise and they turn it on its head, and they add in some timely sort of social commentary and things that make them appropriate for a more modern audience. Without dating them to the point where they then become, you know, cheesy. Okay, I got it. I would get Paul Verhoeven to remake his own RoboCop, set in a modern 2020. Coronavirus is running rampant across the country. Police corruption and killings of civilians. The rich are running the world. Wow, I think I'm just talking about RoboCop right now. Yeah, that's, you know what? Get Paul Verhoeven to redo RoboCop for the modern time, and it would be even more poignant than it always was.
I am always ready for more RoboCop, minus the remake we already got, because I'm pretty sure it didn't exist. It was just a bad fever dream that I had.
Because yeah, see, we always. I think I had a dream that a RoboCop remake happened, but I can't be honest. I can't be sure if that actually happened.
That's one of my favorite releases from the past, 2 years, too, is the Arrow RoboCop. It looks amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, and I know it falls outside the horror genre, and I think, you know, a lot of people shied away from that for some reason, which is crazy to me. But, yeah, that was one of the best Arrow releases in a long time. And they consistently put out good stuff. But RoboCop, like, that was huge. And I remember seeing people all over the internet when that was announced complaining and being like, oh, why is Arrow putting out RoboCop? Like, that's a big budget, you know, that's a blockbuster movie. And you're like, clearly you've never seen RoboCop. And if you have, you haven't seen the right cut. And I mean, RoboCop has a long, glorious tradition of being released by top tier boutique labels. I mean, what was it? Criterion had the Laserdisc and the DVD edition, and for the longest time, that was the quintessential release of RoboCop. There was no point in getting any other one until now. So, props to Arrow again. I feel like we're really lucky to have them doing stuff like that for these great movies.
where you can just sit here and fillet Arrow all day, dude. There's no argument.
I mean, Arrow, send me money or just give me free discs. I will talk about how great you are all the time.
Because you're right. Whenever they do put out anything that's not explicitly horror, like they did Weird Science last year, the internet loses its collective mind for no reason.
Yeah, and it's weird. And I don't get it. Like, I understand the love for horror and stuff. But, I mean, at this point, to me, it's genre film in general, whether it's horror or action or just, like, Andy Sedaris, guns, girls, you know, bombs, craziness. It's all great, and it's all worth checking out, even when it's not. You know, and like you said, Weird Science, like, although I was a little thrown off by them putting out 16 Candles, I'm not going to lie. I thought that was a little strange. And that movie's got some real serious issues with, like, date rape and really weird themes going on in that movie. It's certainly not John Hughes at his best. But then again, hey, you know, like, Arrow's always put out this kind of stuff. Like, Heathers, I mean, is awesome. It's great that they put that out. Mallrats now, like...
I'm sorry, I missed Arrow putting out a Heathers release?
Yes, Arrow put out Heathers. I believe it was a UK exclusive. But I assume you have a region-free player, so you have no excuse to not own it. It came with a slipcover, which you know how infrequently Arrow does their slips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great release. I hope they put out a U.S. release of it so everybody can grab it. But yeah, man, like, that's probably one of their best non-horror releases in a long time, too. Like I said, that and Mallrats, which I was so excited to see them put out because that was, like, one of my favorite movies when I was growing up. And I'll tell you, it has not lost any of its humor, and it's still fantastic. So, worth picking up.
I'll have to pick that one up and grab the Heathers one because I just have the normal Heathers Blu-ray sitting on my shelf over there. It's one of my absolute favorite movies, which furthermore blows my mind that I didn't realize. Yeah, right? What am I doing?
Yeah.
How do we feel on the Cenobite question?
I would be a Cenobite with, like, my eyeballs would be dislocated from their sockets, and they my, like, retinas would be connected, but they'd be, like 2 feet long, and my eyeballs would just be dangling down, and I would, like, when I come out and I come at you and Pinhead's doing his thing, I would just, like, shoot my long retina eyeballs at you, and they'd, like, wrap around your throat and, like, decapitate you.
We got a little Cronenberg-y with our Cenobites, and I'm very okay with that.
It got a little weird. It also speaks to my, like, one of the things in horror that mess me up the most is anything to do with eyes. I can't handle eyes. Scariest things are, like, old women with scary eyes, or people getting their eyeballs stabbed, or, like, needles stuck in them. So, as you can guess, there are a few movies that come to mind that are tough for me to watch.
That's one of the best scenes in Zombie, and one of the lenticular covers they put out was that particular scene. Like,
that's the one I got. Yep, had to have it. that whole scene is so, oh god, just thinking about it, that and, like, Audition with the girl putting the needles in the guy's eyes, like, oh god, that's just horrifying. And I would say, if you're afraid of old ladies with scary eyes, no movie is more terrifying than The Exorcist 3. Which also got an amazing UK Blu-ray release from Arrow recently, too. So, plugging Arrow.
What, you don't love that Scream Factory cover? It was amazing.
I don't. I actually hate that so much. Yeah, I really don't like that artwork at all. And you're about to open a can of worms because I could talk about my other issues with Scream Factory being I just absolutely hate their custom art that they have people do. It's just, ugh. Not all of it. Not all of it. Some of it's cool.
I unabashedly love Scream Factory and have a lot of their stuff, but the artwork.
Yes, I don't want this to be a trashing Scream Factory. This isn't to shit on Scream Factory. like I said, they have their place. I think they hold an important place, honestly, from the releases they put out. And but, you know, that being said, Joel Robinson, who's an amazing artist, does some of their custom art, and his work is always top notch. And that's one of the saddest things about No More Rock and Chalk was I used to love going and buying some Joel Robinson t-shirts from him directly. So if anybody listening doesn't know who Joel Robinson is, look him up, find his Instagram, find his Facebook, give him a follow. He is a fantastic artist and a really great guy.
So I've heard a couple rumors and rumblings. We can talk about it more after the episode that Rock and Chalk is coming back as not as Rock and Shock, but there is still a Worcester convention coming soon.
Well, that's good to know. Rock and Shock 2.0. And yeah, if I could give the creators of that any advice, please make it something other than just an excuse to spend $40 to get in and shop, because I feel like that's kind of where Rock and Shock went eventually, and I was going just for a chance to shop for stuff. More content, more panels, more meat and potatoes.
Exactly. And like a lot of the panels are good, but they are definitely not the main focus of it. They don't put the effort into advertising them or getting any like additional stuff. And the concerts are fun too, but I'm not going to go see ICP again and again and again. Or Twisted, or whatever they have now for it.
Yeah, the last concert I went to at Rock and Shock was, I don't remember what year it was a few years ago. What was it? It was Gwar. I think Life of Agony played, which was really awesome. But man, yeah, Rock and Shock and the concerts used to just be unmissable. Mm-hmm. And then they became kind of hit or missable. So
I think the last big one I went to was the last time Danzig played, and it was him. What's Phil Anselmo's like sludge band? Superjoint Ritual.
Yep.
And Crowbar. That was a hell of a lineup. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lineup right there, man.
Yeah. Holy and then the other major one that like I permanently seared into my memory, it was the year that they had Alice Cooper, Rob Zombie, and the Murder Dolls playing at the Centrum while down the road. Like, as soon as Rob Zombie wrapped up, I ran down and caught Gwar, saw their full set over at the Palladium.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. Do you want to hear a quick story?
Of course.
About Alice Cooper? Mm-hmm. So, were you there the day Alice Cooper was in the mall?
I was not, because he was there that day with the Him and Crew show, right?
Yep.
Was that night? Yeah.
I was in my place of work, and I saw this guy shuffle by, and I was like, holy shit, I think that's Alice Cooper. And I, like a total fucking creep, followed him through the mall into the little convenience store, and I grabbed a drink, and I stood in line behind him. And at that point, I was still trying to figure out if it was definitely him, because he was wearing like golf shorts, a polo shirt, like a white golf hat with like a ponytail pulled up. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's him, but I'm not 100% positive. And at that point, I didn't know enough about him and like his offstage personality to know that he's like an avid golfer. And then this like wicked hot woman who was way younger than him comes running up, and she's like, honey, I got you this. And he's like, I got you a drink. And he turned, and I could just tell from the side profile, I'm like, it's Alice fucking Cooper. Holy shit. So that should have been the end of it. I should have been like, cool. But nope, I kept following him, and like a total weirdo. And I followed him into H&M, and he started shopping for like dad shorts. And I'm like creeping around behind racks. And finally I got up the balls and I went up to him and I was like, hey, you're Alice Cooper. And he was just like, yes, I am. And I said, is there any way that I could get a picture? And he very, very nice and politely told me to fuck myself. No, he told me no. And that he was really sorry, but he was trying to keep a low profile because he just wanted to spend a day with his wife at the mall and do a little shopping. And I totally respected that. But he gave me permission to take some creepy photos of him from, like, candid angles. So I basically just turned into a paparazzi photographer, and I, like, snapped a bunch of pictures of him, like, while he's shopping for shorts. And it was great, and it was cool. And, you know, I don't have a picture with him, but I have a picture of him and a good story to tell. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And, I super geeked out because Wayne's World was, like, my favorite movie when I was, like, 10 years old. And that whole scene with him and the Feed My Frankenstein song, that was my favorite song on the Wayne's World cassette tape that I had. So my love of Alice Cooper runs deep, and that was really awesome.
Same, dude. Absolutely one of my favorite performers of all time. Do you know who does the little vocals at the end of Feed My Frankenstein? It's something I only learned this year, despite loving both of these people involved.
Wow. Well, after I just talked about how great it is and how much I love it, I probably should, but nope.
It's Elvira. He's such a psycho. That's Elvira.
Wow. I'll be honest, I haven't heard it in a long time, but I bet you if I listen to it now, I'd be like, oh, obviously. Like, yeah. Oh, wow. That just makes it extra cool. And I'd like to think that they like were hanging out and were just like best buds. Mm-hmm. but not in character. Him is just like a golfing dad, and her just is like Cassandra, just
being a redhead hottie.
I would absolutely watch the reality show of Vincent and Cassandra just hanging out.
Oh, absolutely. That's, I mean, Shudder, get on this. Why have you not pitched this yet? Like, I will subscribe to Shudder if you guys put that out.
Well, we have been going for a little bit, so we will start to wrap it up. You have recently started a new Facebook page specifically for the boutique labels. The name of that page is?
Boutique Label Aficionados. It's very swanky, very very cool little club that we have. Actually, it's not. It's, you know, it's just like 300 people, but it's fun. You know, we just like share pictures of what we're watching and information about big sales and stuff happening, and just a place for people who appreciate this stuff to go and congregate. I know there's like a million of these groups, so it is what it is, but just our little slice of the internet to talk about, you know, and nerd out about movies. So,
but what I like about being there is it is more focused on like the more niche. Like, I'm on a couple of the different pages that collect and stuff, and there was that like 3 week period where every 2 seconds was another picture of the same Friday the 13th box set. Like, I get it, it's cool, I have it too.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that's exactly why I started it up, because I got tired of a few different things. One being people constantly griping, because I was in some very, like, very specific groups, like Vinegar Syndrome group, Severn group, and it was constantly the same thing. It was people talking about the movies, people complaining about slipcovers, whether they thought they were, like, superfluous and unnecessary, and just, you know, people bickering back and forth about it. And then the big sales would happen, and invariably you'd have like dozens and dozens of people posting about like, where's my order? It hasn't shipped out. It's been 2 days. Like, what the hell? And then, you know, a million pictures of the Friday the 13th box set or the Dawn of the Dead box set that just came out, which it's like, yeah, dude, we get it. You guys bought it. That's great. Go watch it. Stop. You don't have to show off the same thing that everyone else is showing.
Exactly.
So, you know, we made a little rule, and it was like, no bitching about slipcovers, you know, no complaining about, oh, I ordered from Severin and they haven't shipped and it's been 48 hours, you know, what the hell, you know.
And especially with Severin, it's such a small group of people who work together to ship it. Like, they literally post the pictures, hey, here's the five of us sweating our asses off trying to ship all this stuff out. We're working on it, I promise.
Absolutely. And the guys who work at Severn are some of the nicest people. And, you know, Jason and Andrew and some of these guys who do like the podcasts and everything, they're an incredible group, and it's really small, and, you know, they do their absolute best. So like, what the hell do people expect from them? You know, this isn't Warner Brothers. Like, cut them some slack, you know. Black Friday's coming up. I'm sure people listening to this are going to be ordering from Vinegar Syndrome and Severn and all these great sales that are happening. You know, don't be a dick, and don't put these brand owners like through the ringer, because I mean, it's really sad when you see the guy who runs Mondo Macabro posting on Facebook saying like, honestly, I kind of just want to stop doing this, because he got some like super angry emails, people like telling him off and swearing at him because, you know, he didn't ship their order right away or something like that. It's like, give me a fucking break, guys. You know, don't blow up Vinegar Syndrome with a million emails of where's my order. You know, all the information you need to know is in the Vinegar Syndrome emails if you get them. It's on their website. It's on their Facebook. They're going to be shipping out in waves. Like, just chill out, guys. Like, buy some cool stuff. Know that it's going to take some time to get to you, and just be excited and buy other cool stuff in the meantime. And actually watch these movies that you're collecting, because that's what they're there for.
Exactly.
You know, so... big Black Friday is going to be really exciting. You know, I'm sure you've already seen the selection of stuff that like Vinegar Syndrome and Severin and these guys are putting out. Really, really cool releases. Severin's releases this year are way different than what they've done in the past. It's not all like Italian crazy exploitation horror. It's some like more modern stuff that I honestly don't really know much about, which makes it more exciting for me, because it's I enjoy the thought of getting into something that's a little bit different. And for the longest time, I avoided some of the more modern stuff from like the early 2000s. But, you know, after picking up a few things, I'm kind of thinking maybe that's my next blind spot that I need to dig into.
And yeah, definitely excited for their Theater of the Bizarre reissue. Yes. Like, yep. I want that. The signed like playbill they're making for that too is insane. Like, Tom Savini and Richard Stanley are both on it. Shit. I need that.
Yeah, that looks really cool. And then what is it, the audio book or something?
Yeah.
of color out of space with
read by Richard Stanley, whose voice is so like, I love his odd accent and the voice he has for everything is just so specific to him. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, he is the character, and to listen to him reading that is going to be really, really cool. So that's even if you're not a big fan of the Color Out of Space movie, which was, you know, it was cool. Definitely pick that up, because the chance to get to listen to Richard read that is going to be just, like, unmissable.
Agreed. And if you are into all that stuff, definitely go check out the Antique Label Aficionados page on Facebook. Will, where can people follow you online?
You can find me on Instagram. Just Corpse Wizard is my Instagram name. Recently, I've kind of shifted gears on my Instagram, and now it's majority Seinfeld screenshots and whatever movies I'm watching at the time. I don't post up my hauls when I get them anymore. If anything, I just post when I watch a movie, and I do my best to always write a review, long or short, so that people get an idea of what it is I'm watching, and hopefully somebody checks it out and goes, hey, I've never heard of that movie, I'm gonna check it out and maybe find something cool.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to do the show. I really appreciate it. This will be going live this upcoming Tuesday, so on the 23rd. Oh, sorry, 24th. Oh, I can't count.
Well, I'm glad we finally got to do it. We were trying for a while, and we finally made it happen. So the podcast is awesome, and keep doing great shit, because we need more people out there doing stuff like this.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you all for listening, and thank you, Bill, for hopping on. I just want to say that I do love Scream Factory, warts and all. It feels silly to have to clarify that. It can be easy to pick apart the seams of something good. They do a lot of good work and put out a lot of good stuff. I love their Nightbreed reissue from a couple years ago. It's one of my favorite things on my shelf. So shout out to Shout/Scream Factory. You do good work. I hope you all had a fantastic Halloween and have a great Thanksgiving too. Stay home, stay safe, introduce your household to Thanksgiving, Blood Feast, and maybe an intermission showing of the Eli Roth Thanksgiving trailer from the Grindhouse double feature. If you're enjoying the show, please give it a follow on social media. You can find me at @SlashingsPod. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also email me directly at slashingspod@gmail.com. Hit me up with your Thanksgiving horror movie recommendations. Give me some funky new recipes to try. I'd be happy to gobble them all up. I'll be back in 2 weeks, once I wake up out of my turkey coma. I'll have some more fiendish fun for you. Until then, wear a mask. Especially you, you ugly fuck. Yeah, you know who you are. Wear a fucking mask. Wash your hands, practice safe hex, and keep it creepy.